Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
For those who don't know music terminology, a bridge is a structure that connects shores over a body of water.
Shut the fuck up.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, we've got the PartyCast crew. Pernell is here. Chris is here. Tim is here. Brooke is here. How is everybody doing?
Really good. I just came from the mall, so I'm fairly morose. Oh my
God. Oh shit. I'm so sorry to hear that, dude.
You came from the mall?
Yeah, it makes me sad. I used to work at that mall. I haven't been inside of it in ages. So I'm walking through it after going for the errand I had to run, and there's nothing there. All my old haunts are gone. Even the GameStop that wasn't there, gone. Like, the Hot Topic is gone. The Hot Topic.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's not okay.
Is Spencer's still there?
Spencer's gone.
What?
Oh, my God.
My freaking, like, clearly Canadian, gone. Everything gone. It's just, but FYE still there for somehow.
Wow. Somehow.
Chick-fil-A is like the one food joint in the mall that just draws customers. Like, people are coming to the mall just to get Chick-fil-A. I got nothing.
It's just, that FYE is going to be doing a lot of heavy lifting on that old entertainment front.
Somebody please come be entertained by us. We're begging you. DVD.
Please buy our CDs that are three times the normal price.
Pretty much.
You really need this, man.
When in route, Funko Pops. Get a Funko Pop. We got all of them. We got all your favorite Funko Pops. They look exactly the same, so you can't tell them apart.
Funko Pop is like, you know how they're like, before like a huge storm or something like that in the wild, like, you know, there might be like a little, you know, herd of rats or something just like running in the opposite direction of like this oncoming disaster. That's like Funko Pops. Right before Spirit Halloween.
Well, I'm trying to figure this out. Do you see all the Funko Pops getting thrown in another? What?
They're running from Spirit Halloween. They're being
chased. the harbinger of the oncoming disaster.
Funko Pops. Oh my God. And also, here's a thing I just learned too. As in the last hour, did you know that if you transfer your data from one Switch to the next, every cart you ever put in doesn't show up on there on your list until you put it in the system again?
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
I did not know that until recently. I was like looking for a game. I'm like, it's not on here. I was going to go on and get the data update for it. Turns out I got to put the cart back in the system for it to show up.
Oh, no. You got to put the cart back in. Holy shit.
Hey, if you're me, you lost that a year ago. So that would be the end for me.
It's a farewell. Like, but it's also just a element of, like, you know, if I'm trying to keep track of how much I got on this thing, it's like now the list is off by a good chunk because every physical game except for like five isn't on here.
Well, go put all of your Switch games back in one by one. Repopulate that list.
Repopulate the world.
I meant the list, but if you want to repopulate the world, I mean, that's on you. I mean,
it's all you for now.
You'll be busy, hey, but.
For some people, the Switch is their world.
Thank you.
I do love my Switch. I'm not even looking forward to when the system dies because as much as I love the Switch, their online is hot garbage. And their linking of accounts is also hot garbage. Yeah. So all these games are just going to go poof, just like your Wii U shop and your Wii shop. Oh my God.
I've been holding on to my Wii U in the hopes that they were going to bring a virtual console to the Switch, but I think I'm just going to give up and sell the Wii U. So if anyone is in the market for a Wii U, I know that's the hot new system on the market today.
Hey, it's the newest retro Nintendo system on the market today.
Hey, the Wii portion is soft modded, so you could play emulators. That's all that matters.
Did you know, and this will help you sell your Wii U, did you know that there's an exclusive Game Boy Advance game or version of a Game Boy Advance game on the Wii U?
I do. I only learned it 3 days ago.
Yeah, you probably saw the same video I did.
What game?
Yep. What is it?
Super Mario 3, right?
Yeah, Super Mario Bros. Advance Force, Super Mario Brothers 3, which is a lovely title. So, if you didn't remember, it's the only chapter of the Super Mario Advances. You know, it's the final one. It was the one that had extra content that you could get via the e-reader and like some actual cards.
I was pissed about that too. It's like, this was the one I was waiting the most for of all the Mario re-releases. Like, hey, all that stuff you were hoping for, better buy an e-reader. Screw you.
or buy it on the Wii U, because it includes all of the e-reader content. Plus, it actually has like, there were more cards than there were available slots, weirdly enough, because there were a lot of like exclusives and stuff. So you couldn't get all the cards in on the same game data, which is bizarre. But they actually, they put every single one on there. And so they actually edited the game to include, like, you know, the capacity to do every single, like, card bonus.
Oh, wow.
So you couldn't even, like, even if you had all the e-cards, you could not play the same game that is available on the Wii U.
Hmm.
And it's wild stuff. It's like, Mario 3, but you can pull up, like, radishes and you can, like, wear a cape from Mario 4. And it's, like, crazy stuff. Anyway.
Yeah, because I know, like, there was, like, images back in the day and, like, no power. So I was like, this is what you're going to get. It's like, well, how in the hell is he, how's there a charging Chuck getting hit with a turnip? I don't get it. And you're just waiting to figure out what they're doing and how they're doing that. And then apparently, which is, I didn't even know until I saw the video, there were region locked cards, or not locked, but, like, region distributed cards, too. And, like, tailor exclusive cards. So, like, cards that you would have never seen, even if you were, like, collecting all the U.S. released cards, you still wouldn't have seen the levels that are on this thing.
That's the reason I never got into that Drop Mix game, that the card music game from Harmonix.
Oh, the one that's piled up in the corner upstairs. Yeah, I know that.
Well, they have, like, convention-exclusive cards and retail-exclusive cards. I'm like, I don't want to get into that. I've gotten into enough with Rock Band and all the DLC there. I didn't want to dive in on another game and just get walloped by exclusive content and retailer bonuses and all this other. I completely skipped out on Drop Mix because of that.
This is a part of me that kind of hates that whole MO too, where it's like companies think that to incentivize you to come to their booth at a convention or to go to a specific retailer at a specific day of the week, they have unique cards.
Unique.
That's right. Slip it in there, zip, zip, zip. And it's like they have, I mean, I get the incentive desire, but I mean, if they're trying to, you know, work with the fans that they've already got that are like nationwide or in some cases international, it's like, it seems like a slap in the face. Like, hey, all those Garbage Pail Kids you collect that you love because you've been buying them since you were four. Well, now you can't get this one because you can't make it up to San Diego Comic-Con at this exact time. Like, fuck you, man. Not fair. I don't get it. Don't get it. It doesn't help anything. It doesn't help anything.
Have convention exclusive Funko Pops. You're bringing this fucker back around.
But the beautiful thing is, they all look the same, so it doesn't even fucking matter. This was green. This was blue. He still got the same two big wacky eyes and the same stovetop head. Like, nothing changes.
Hey, I will say now that my Psyduck Funko Pops looks nothing like my Shantae Funko Pop except for the eyes.
Yeah, you can do it.
Oh my god, I just had a thought. What if Spirit Halloween started selling Funko Pops?
Oh my god.
No, Funko Shantae costume. You could be a Funko Pop Shantae for Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
Just get paper plates, paint them black, and stick them on your face. God. You're done.
That's exactly the same idea I had. Jill and I are equals in bad cosplay.
That's all you got to do. Just boom.
Yeah.
Paper plates. Tim, how are you doing? You're quiet.
I'm just catching up on SML Podcast episode 721 for no reason whatsoever.
Oh, wow. You got to get those Purnell clips, man.
There's got to catch them all. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's worth Purnell points.
Purnell points.
I actually like that.
Purnell reacts.
Cool. You can unlock exclusive Purnell material.
Some kind of fun stuff is on episode 721.
Oh, nothing.
Wow.
Not a fan.
I'm just spending time listening to a show that I am not entertained by. No big deal. No big deal. So,
if you want to sell your Wii U, let everybody know that in like 10 years there's going to be a horseshoe crab flipping game released for it.
Oh no, that'll be on the new Nintendo 3DS.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which, by the way, the dev heard our review and he was happy that we covered it.
Yeah. Oh wow, that's
so that's pretty cool. We made someone's day.
Did the dev actually write to you about it?
He replied on Twitter.
That's pretty cool. He's like, I'm glad to hear that more fans of the horseshoe community will take notice and show up for the gun.
Yeah, so Horseshoe Crab Rescue is available now on the new Nintendo 3DS for $1. Chris, what do you give it?
I gave him $1.
Speaking of reviews, should we get to the reviews? We have a bunch to get to tonight.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Tim wants to talk about his. I'm sure he's eager to chat about his review.
Chomping at the bit.
I'm eager to hear about this first game.
All right, well, let's get to it. First game to talk about tonight is Sherlock Holmes Chapter 1, developed and published by Frogwares, released November 15th on Xbox Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $49.99, coming soon to Xbox One and PS4. In this story-driven detective thriller, a young Sherlock Holmes struggles to prove himself as he navigates an exotic, dangerous island in the Mediterranean to investigate the mystery of his mother's death. Brooke, tell us about your time with Sherlock Holmes Chapter 1.
Oh, wow. So this game is just, it's stellar. It's excellent. It is, it's so fucking good. This review is actually a little hard for me because over the weekend I had a review written up on what I thought was a really funny, clever take on this game. And I was playing it some more a little last night and I got a major plot twist and I learned that that wasn't my idea. I played right into their hands and they punked me so hard. It was so cool. I love it when games do that to me and just have amazing writing. I wish I could tell y'all what happened, but I definitely can't because it's spoilers. I can't rob anybody of that moment because it was a really cool moment for me. But if you play the game, it'll happen within the first few hours of the game. Basically, the idea I thought I was having, that was their idea. They wanted me to think it was my idea, and they got me so good. I thought I was so cool and funny, and I'm not. They are the cool, funny ones. So this game is just a wow experience for me. You know, I have like top 5, top 10 ultimate moments in my life as a gamer that have like shook me and made me go, wow, that was so amazing. That was so cool. I'll never forget that. One of those moments for me was in Dragon Age 2, towards the end, if you know what I'm talking about. Really like a moment that makes you stop and go, oh shit, a game just did this to me. I'm not even done with this game, and no spoilers, but it's already given me a moment or two that is right up there with like just the best of the best. It's just, I can't gush enough about this game. It's truly a great piece of media. It's super well done. Writing's top notch. If you're a gamer who is serious about playing the games with the best writing, this is definitely up there for me with Witcher 3, the Dragon Age games, and other BioWare games. You know, with the whole Sherlock Holmes thing, as a character outside of these games, I'm not a huge Sherlock fan. I didn't think this would be much of a pull for me. I was like, wow, I'm so tired of Sherlock stuff right now. In media, can we please do something else? But now I have to pull a Purnell-style review from last week's show here and be like, wow, I was so wrong. This is such a creative take on Sherlock Holmes. It's not the same story. It is a totally different character, even though it still feels like a version of Sherlock Holmes. Yet it is such a specifically written character and well-written. I have to compare this game to Witcher 3 again by saying that this has given me like super immersive experience as far as playing a pre-written character in its own world, a character that I'm not creating. You know, when you make your own character like in Skyrim or something, it can feel really generic. But this experience has meaning in it and it feels real. This game's actually doing so much. I have two small complaints about this game. And then we can go into the try it, buy it phase. Definitely don't not play the game because of this, but please keep it in mind so you know it's not you. I think the tutorial first case of this game leaves a lot to be desired as far as functionality and learning just the mechanics of the game and how it plays. I felt really strongly about this in my first 2 hours of playing. I had my partner play this game after I did for a couple hours separately, play through the tutorial in first case to see if we both had the same issues getting stuck on the same parts. The first part of the tutorial and the mystery, which intros you into all the mechanics. And we did. We both got stuck on the exact same parts. I think this game could have used a lot more playtesting before release, just for the tutorial and getting used to it. A lot wasn't well explained, didn't go as smoothly as you'd want. And we're both fairly competent gamers since childhood. This game's
I'm not, so that's trouble for me. I'm an idiot.
Yeah, so you're going to want to hit me up and be like, Brooke, what do I do now? I'll be here for you,
dude. You turn the system on, dipshit. Oh,
have you tried restarting? the PC. Have you tried connecting to Steam? But yeah, so this game is a full game experience. It's like Fallout, Bioshock, Mass Effect. And I'm more forgiving than anybody when a piece of fine art isn't perfect. But for my second complaint, accessibility-wise, I just want to say I'm not sure why this game adds combat. That may seem like a weird complaint from me, who's played a lot of combat-y games. But it's a couple to several hours into the game before combat even comes up for the first time. Combat is fairly accessible. You can slow things down when you're aiming, kind of like the last Fallout games are allowing players to do when they shoot and they snipe. Some of the combat's really easy and almost reminiscent of more of like a Telltale game, if anything. But it just seems like a weird choice to me. And it's bear with me on this. I think it's a little bit of a shame to add combat in there, because before I got to the first part with it, I was going to come on here and sing this game's praises for making a really cool, complete experience without fighting or violence, because you are just a detective. I thought this could actually help the game attract a ton of casual gamers who might be put off by having to learn all of that and maybe, you know, feel like they just don't deserve the game. As a serious gamer myself, I am used to a lot of different combat systems, but like, boom, you're hours into the game and surprise, it's a huge open world. You can walk around in it. You can knock people over. You can do everything other open world games are doing, but like climb or jump basically. And then boom, okay, there's also combat. Don't think too hard about that one. So it's a weird choice for me, but I do understand why it was made. With combat, this title can compete for a top slot among the more serious, like, gamery games. And maybe some players won't be attracted to a game without combat. Maybe that's why it was made, and I respect that. If you're not going to have a complete experience in an open world game without shooting somebody in the face, like, I get it. I get it, buddy. I'm angry too. Shit's fucked up out there right now.
We live in America.
But yeah, all in all, just super impressed by this game. Really loved it.
Cool. So the game is sitting at $44.99. There is also a deluxe edition that includes a season pass for $59.99. The season pass itself is normally $24.99, so it's a $10 savings if you buy the package. The season pass is supposed to come with like outfits and quests and stuff like that. What are your thoughts on the game, and what are your thoughts on the bundle with the season pass?
I gotta say, just the base game itself, I'm gonna have to think about the bundles and the DLC, but I'm gonna rate this a buy it. And you know, for my last reviews, I said it's a buy it for certain players, but I actually want to say that this is a buy it just across the board to almost all players, which is a hefty thing for me to say. I don't say that lightly. More serious gamery gamers, if you love Witcher 3, the BioWare game, stuff like that, buy it, buy this game. I'm also going to say to more casual gamers, even though I have my reservations about the combat system, don't be intimidated by the fact there is combat and not try this game. Y'all need to buy this game too. Some of my friends who are even more into more like story-driven games, even point-and-click adventures, I think even those players should probably buy this game and just get their mind blown by it. I don't think it's going to be too hard for anybody. It feels like it's going to be a lot harder than it is. It really is, at its core, like a mystery and story game, and it's gonna pay off. Just a final endorsement for the base game. There are those people out there who like to buy things on Steam and play them for just under the 2 hours to see if they like it, and then if they don't, they return it. Even those players, I really believe, are gonna keep this game. I think you're more pumped for this game 2 to 4 hours into it than you are when you begin, and I don't think all the games are gonna do that for us. I don't understand why this game doesn't have a demo in the Steam store. That seems weird to me, because I think they'd make a shitload of money. But they probably still will, and I hope they do. I think they earned it. Uh-huh. As far as like the extra outfits, and you know, I'm not really sure. Maybe I haven't gotten. I'm less than 20 hours into this game. Maybe I haven't gotten to the part where the outfits and the extra things really matter. But I'd have to play it more.
Cool. Well, this one is on my wish list. I think you sold me on it. It sounds really good. I didn't know it was an open world game, so that puts a new spin on it.
For 2 hours in, I didn't know it was an open world game. Suddenly I'm in this giant city and I start walking and I bump into this lady and she's an NPC. She's like, "Hey man, what the hell are you doing?" And I'm like, "Oh my God, this is so freaking cool." They really get you that way too. You think it's going to be a simpler game, and then they drop you into a full experience that I wasn't expecting at all.
Nice. Sounds good. All right, next game to talk about is Instant Sports Paradise, developed by Break First Games, published by Plug-In Digital, released September 1st on the Switch, $24.99. Summer is here with family and friends. Instant Sports Paradise takes you overseas under the sun of a paradise island. Share a multitude of sporty and fun experiences without leaving your house. Tim, tell us about your time with the sporty fun of Instant Sports Paradise.
Jesus fucking Christ. So, I will just give up the goat right now. And yes, we reviewed this game 5 weeks ago on this very show.
What?
On episode 721. Chris reviewed it. You can just go back to that episode and tune into an hour and 8 minutes, 8 minutes and 50 seconds. It's just after I leave the show and go to bed that we start talking about Instant Sports Paradise.
Well, now it makes sense why you didn't realize we covered it, and I didn't realize we covered it because I'm stupid.
There we are. The joke's on you, developers of Instant Sports Paradise. If you thought you were going to slip it in there and get a better review, bad luck. You got me.
I'm sorry right now.
Chris was
so I was the good cop.
Nice to this game. Yeah, Chris was the good cop. When this game released and was $35, you note that it's $24.99. And he was like, though, oh, yeah, it's worth a try. Yeah, sure. Well, he was also saying like, oh, maybe it's better on other platforms because it's a technical disaster on the Switch.
Yeah, it is on PS4 as well. So,
yeah. So, but well, it's like when I kind of got done playing it, I was like, I wonder how much this is. This might be fun for like 10, 15 bucks. And then I saw it was $24.99. I was like, oh no. So yeah, this is a sports mini game collection. I don't know how redundant I want to be, for people who listened. Maybe if you're a new listener, you didn't hear that,
maybe
review.
If you're Tim.
But yeah, if you are me, yeah, but I don't need him to tell me what the games are because I played it.
Maybe you also go to bed after Tim's reviews.
Yeah, maybe you go to bed before my reviews.
We all should, really. I mean, this show sucks.
I'm going to bed right now.
All right, good night.
All right. Do you have any final words, Chris?
So, this is a little mini game collection, which has kind of the fun question mark trappings of being like having an open world adventure-ish structure. And when I say open world, I mean like a very small world. It's just like, it's not, you're not just like picking games from a list. Like you are there on an island, and you have to run. Well, you can run around to where you initiate the games, or you can just talk to a map and then it will zip you straight to them, which is nice. I did play this game with my child. This game is certainly intended to be played with up to four people and not by yourself. I can't believe Chris is still here and not hanging from the rafters after playing this game by himself. It's just like, it's just like all the goals. So the games, you know, you have air hockey, which is a lie. It's not air hockey. It's an arcade game that's sort of like air hockey and makes some air hockey noises. Exactly. Mini golf, which is actually like probably my favorite thing, despite still kind of being a mess, but it was a fun mess. Seaplane, which is also good. Jet ski, which is crap. Wakeboard, which is no good. Wingsuit, which is a great way to clip your way through the ground and see the game from the inside out. And then restart because you can't do anything once you've clipped yourself inside the mountain. Boy, was my kid good at doing that. There is the ice cream game, which is not delicious. It's about matching ice cream scoops, which is kind of fun. It kind of bums me. So it like maps a different color to each button on the face of your controller. And I wish it was consistent between like orders of ice cream. So you didn't have to keep like looking down. You could actually get into a puzzly groove and do that, but nah. There's ping pong, which is again not ping pong. They like formatted any of these games where you would be playing directly against another player to not do that so that they wouldn't have to program AI, presumably. So you're it's like a single player version of air hockey and ping pong. And then bowling, which is a nightmare, which is weird because it's bowling. And I feel like that's pretty well-worn territory.
The bowling is so bad.
The bowling is really bad. There's a game called Walk, which is just a funny little cooking kind of.
I love that one. That one's my favorite.
That like button tappy thing. It's very simple but and silly, but it's okay. And Shell Hunt, which is actually best at the medium difficulty, I felt, which is weird. It's about like collecting different shells off the beach and getting combos and whatever. And then archery, which Chris, you mentioned, stands out because it eventually has you firing arrows on a mountainside when 60 mile an hour winds.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm like, what is going on here? Why is this legal? What are you doing with these children?
Jesus Christ.
But yeah, it's definitely like the games themselves are major, major mixed bag of quality and functionality. And, you know, some like, you know, me and the kid were like, OK, this is we got to go find something else to do right now. And some were like, oh, OK, like you know, I was having fun with Seaplane. I think he was having trouble getting the concept of it because I was mopping the island with him mercilessly. But, you know,
the only way to learn.
It's the only way. I don't pull my punches with this kid in video games. Get good. And yeah. Anyways, besides the point.
I do the same with my niece. She wants to play Ultimate Chicken Horse all the time. And she's like, could I play and win once? I'm like, no, you could win when you fucking earn a win.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what he won at. And I don't know what it was. Might have been archery, actually, because I sent something like to the next island over. Yeah, some of the games are like at best, they're like decent. And some are just like, oh, my God, just get me out of here. And then there's only about a dozen of them. When you're running around the island, there are a few other activities you can participate in, like catching bugs or they're like we ran across like this random like four-way soccer court. Where you can play soccer with each other, and there's just like kind of a little game there. And I think that's kind of a cool thing. Like if you had four people in there running around, you kind of just stumble into a game and do that. Like that's kind of fun stuff. But for the most part, it was just like go up to the map board, go to the next game, go do that.
It seems like based on how you described it, the most active, you know, side game in that exploration will be sobbing uncontrollably. But
yeah, you also like earn currency that you can use to buy outfits for your characters, which you can show off to people in your own home. And they seem to be like a lot of the outfits seem to be kind of unnecessarily expensive. But all the games, like if you're doing like a single player progression in this game, like each game kind of has a score to beat, which I did not find any of them difficult to beat. Except for bowling, because that is a nightmare, a control nightmare. And wakeboard was weird because it relies on you like hitting ramps and doing grinds and tricks and stuff like that. And it doesn't Tony Hawk. It is not. But, you know, you'll play through each game on easy, medium, hard. You'll bust through it. You'll be done with it. And, you know, I can see how like one person playing by themselves would be kind of run through the gamut of the content in like under an hour, like easily, very easily,
very easily.
Yeah. It seems like the game is best suited. Well, the game's obviously best suited for having four people in the room to play together. So you can zip through the games and, you know, just bang against this mess together as a group, at an appropriate price point, which $25 is not, but yeah, just like my going in was like, oh, yeah, if it's, you know, maybe it starts out at like 10, 15, you catch it on a good sale for like under 10. Like you could definitely grab this, get some friends in the room, have a blast and then delete it off your Switch and never think about it again. but for $25, that is no, you should nobody. Yeah. Nobody should be paying $25 for this game. And again, yeah, it has technical issues alongside just kind of its general design issues. And yeah, don't buy it at 25, but if you go back in time and listen to 721, you might want to try it at 35.
Wow.
Maybe after this, we can delete it off our collective hard drives and we just never, need maybe a, Purnell will be reviewing it next month. Who knows?
Maybe.
Well, fuck it. Why not? Because it's the only thing left.
Yeah. It I'm sorry. I was just going to say it didn't survive my latest 60 gigabytes of cuts that I had to make because I filled up my terabyte card again.
Oh, geez.
You do it, man. Seriously. I still have like 100 left and I've been trying to get more frugal with it. And here you are like, nope, fucking full, bitch. Like, how do you do it?
This is just my life.
I mean, we do the same shit. We both look for discounted games. Yeah. We like an absurd number of types of games. So there's like nothing goes unpurchased. And yet here you are needing a fucking 2 terabyte card. Jesus Christ, man.
Well, I'll tell you one thing of how this happens. So I was just on the Switch eShop just now while everybody else was talking. And
you bought 17 games.
I came across this game, Forklift Simulator, and I was like, wait a freaking minute. I checked my own library. There's another game called Forklift the Simulation that I've already purchased and downloaded.
He knows what he likes.
So there's Forklift the Simulation and now Forklift Simulator. So of course I bought Forklift Simulator and I downloaded it and I'm going to compare the two at some point.
I mean, it's a crowded market with these forklift sims.
I just bought Millie and Greg. And here you are buying Forklift Simulator. Like
again, for the second time.
I thought you were about to say, here I am. I thought you were going to say, I already bought Millie and Greg. That's nothing new to me.
No, I don't think I have. But no, it's just, it kills me that there's, from different developers, there's Forklift Simulator and Forklift the Simulation.
One of them was inspired by the other, but didn't think anybody would care enough to notice.
Tim, how does it feel that these are like your final words, is hearing Chris talk about Forklift Sim?
I kind of zoned out.
Wow. Oh my God.
I started browsing the eShop, you know.
Did you find Forklift Simulator?
No, I'm trying to figure out why my websites aren't working, but that's a whole other, you know, pile of grass.
It's a pastime, honestly. I love browsing that damn thing. I don't know why. I mean, even with the SMT5 addiction going on right now, it's like I still want to look for games I'm not going to play but buy. Just do it. It's a bad freaking habit. I admit it. I acknowledge it. It's okay. But it's also not okay. I need a doctor.
Hey, there's a Black Friday sale going on Xbox, and I just picked up Lost Judgment and Sniper Contracts 2, so I know how it feels.
I had to talk myself out of Lost Judgment because I almost bought that on Sunday because Discount Mania at Target, they started their Black Friday sales early. So I was like, well, you know, I guess I'll do it. And
yeah, I picked up Deathloop from Best Buy on Black Friday deals because Tim was like, hey, $25 is good. And
yeah,
they had it for $30 with a steel book that was $10. So I figured, fuck it, why not?
That's my one regret is I didn't get mine. Didn't come with the steel, but the price was right.
Did you get it from Best Buy or no?
Nah, Target. So no. Same deal.
Return it. Get it from Best Buy. Get your steel.
No. The price difference made it worth it because it was $30, but then I got a coupon for getting my vaccine there. And then I had, you know, $20 in points because I bought something else there the other day. So it was an extra $20 that they gave me. So I was like, well, $20 plus $5, subtract that from $30, $5 for this game that I might never boot up. Yeah, why the fuck not?
There you go.
You just do the thing. Like, what are you playing instead? Shin Megami 5? Do you regret it? Fuck you, no. It's great.
So I have to fire that up still.
My first Black Friday sale purchase was none other than Balan Wonderworld.
Ooh, would you pay for it?
$15. I was I've been waiting and waiting, and I probably could have waited longer and gotten it for under 10, but I was like, God damn it, I want to see that. That is the kind of mess I want to see.
That game was one I was going to buy, you know, like for $10-$15, and actually intentionally want to play around with it.
No, I do. Like, I played the demo, and it was weird as hell.
Well, that's the thing. Like, what I'm saying is, like, I was like, I'm same boat where I was like, I wanted to try it, right? So I was like, okay, I'll buy it at the time. And a friend of mine who reviewed it when it came out was like, what are you talking about? I was like, it can't be as bad as people are saying. I want to play it for myself. You know, the usual line people have to say. He's like, fuck no. No, you're playing it right now. He shut off what we were playing. He's like, we're playing it right now because you're not spending money on this game. He's like, I played it and I just spent 30 minutes complaining. Like, it was just a bunch of complaints where, keeping in mind, I wanted to like it. We have a mutual friend who was saying, you know, kids like this game. It's for kids. At least acknowledge that. I'm like, even for kids, this is a slap in their face. Like, what the hell were they thinking with some of this shit? The lack of a jump button. I used to tell them, I was telling myself, maybe the lack of a jump button is on the reviewers. Maybe they just didn't realize that you actually can jump with certain causes. No, no. Somehow Yuji Naka thought that being able to jump whenever you want was too fucking complicated for kids. Like, you bullshit moron. We've been playing Mario 3 for how long? Mario 1, you could throw fireballs and jump. Not that complicated. Like, Jesus Christ. Like, it was an insult to everything. Especially how much I love Knights and Sonic. It's like, how do you go from those products
that are also not that great?
Yeah, you say that, but you just bought Balan Wonderworld.
I did, because it's weird. Yeah, like, I played the demo. Like, I know what's wrong with it, but I also know what's right with it. So, like, that is, like, it reminds me, it is very reminiscent of just, like, late 90s, early 2000s 3D platformer, just Dreamcast weirdness, and I have to mess around with it more.
I will say the weirdness is definitely there, but then once the weirdness is like, okay, I see some weirdness, you're like, why the fuck is the fire hydrant unable to fucking jump? Why can't the fire hydrant?
It's a fire hydrant, Pernell. When was the last time you saw a fire hydrant jump?
In 1986 on the corner of 5th and Cube. That fucker hopped like nobody's business, and it freaked me out. But you know what?
You're lying.
Why would you call me a liar? I'm as honest as they come. Oh, by the way, here's a review. Buy this game.
This is my favorite review so far.
I don't even know what the fuck's going on anymore.
Yeah,
I think
Pernell does have to do a review, though.
Yeah, he does. So, yeah, Tim, we're going to let you get going. Thank you, as always, for being here. Do you have any final words before we let you go?
I absolutely do not.
All right, next game to talk about is Death's Door, developed by Acid Nerve, published by Devolver Digital, released November 23rd on the Switch for $19.99. Reaping souls of the dead and punching a clock might get monotonous, but it's honest work for a crow. Pernell, tell us about Death's Door.
So, one second, actually, before I go into Death's Door, I want to make sure of something very special. Okay. Okay, so Death's Door is a game that I wanted to try because I think on the Xbox One release, Cole reviewed it a couple months back, and she gushed the living daylights out of this freaking game. So I was like, what the hell is so special about it that she talked it up so much? So I was happy to see it come to Switch because that's my wheelhouse. So I was able to pick it up and putz around with it, and I can definitely see where she found love for this game. The idea behind it is that you are a reaper who's also apparently a crow, because reapers in this world are crows. And the concept that the world has is that reapers are immortal. But for whatever reason, when it's time to go for a reap, like an actual reap job, until you come back from the job itself, you become mortal. I guess it's meant to put, you know, expediency on your task. I don't know. But until you bring the soul back, you become immortal. So the very, well, amortal, not immortal. So on your very first task, you go out to reap a soul, and as you're about to collect it, some asshole old bird crow steals it from you and runs off. You give chase to him, what is pretty much the tutorial stage, and then at the end of it, you come to realize that this crow was trying to use the soul you stole to unlock a door called Death's Door. It's a door that has been keeping him stuck on Earth, and therefore he was able to age and grow old. This is all early stuff, so no spoilers. Just give me the template of the game. And then as a result of him stealing your soul, he hits you with the same freaking burden and tries to do the, well, little crow, I guess we're in the same pickle. I tried to stab him 5 times. It didn't take. I was pissed. but like beyond that, the game opens up. And what an interesting little game it is. Best way to describe this is a game that was inspired by fans, that was made by fans inspired by Zelda. They gave it a nice little whimsical take of their own, and it shines. The narrative is based around you collecting 3 giant souls, basically souls that have been around for so long that they've become immensely powerful, hence meaty enough that they just might be the ticket to unlock the door you both are trying to get into. So you're in the Lost Graveyard, which is like the hub world, and from that hub world, you have to branch out to the other 3 zones where these giant souls are being housed. And each of those environments are like their own dungeon world. So like a mansion or, you know, like a forest, stuff like that. And as you're exploring these environments, someone's eating chips and they sound really good. I hope they're hers. Take hers, mine.
I wish it was me.
I do too. God, I love hers.
I'm so chips. Hungry.
we'll telepathically send you some delicious vittles.
Thank you.
Where the hell is this review going?
Earn food. I stop. Back to the game. So as you're exploring the world itself, just like how Zelda would typically work, you're exploring. You're exposed to a variety of different puzzles, and you're trying to solve those to progress further into the environment where the eventual final the boss of the area is. And there's like small narrative bits you'll come across too when you meet new characters that exist in the world. Nothing too, you know. Time consuming or attention stealing, but just enough to give the environments you go to a little bit of extra flavor. Combat is actually pretty snappy in this game. You have your melee weapon button. You have the ability to roll out of danger, and you have invincibility frames while you roll. You also have some tool items in this game. You start out with a bow and arrow, but eventually you'll get three other items, which I won't really spoil per se. But I will say, because it factors into my thoughts on the game, they're none of the tools you get in this game are something you've never seen before. They've all been done in the past. They don't wow in any way in this game, but they are still enjoyable to use because the game itself is fun to play. You get up to, there's a total of five weapons in the game, though, and they kind of perform a bit differently from each other, like how fast they operate, how much damage they do. Though, unfortunately, one of them is a joke weapon, so there's actually only really four weapons in the game, because I count them a joke weapon. But nonetheless, though, it is still fun to choose a favorite weapon and kind of work around with it and play with it to the best of your ability. As you kill enemies, you'll get soul points, which you can take back to the hub and go to your boss. You can spend them on, like, sort of upgrades like your speed, your attack speed, your magic power levels, whatever. Magic being like you're getting the four items that you can get. All in all, the exploring in this game, combat in this game, and just engaging the world that it provides is a lot of fun. The combat is very snappy. The puzzles are fun to solve, even with well-treaded equipment types. It's still fun to use in this all the puzzles the game has laid out for you. And due to the fact of how healing works in this game, it keeps you on your toes. What do I mean by that? Well, unlike in Zelda, enemies don't drop hearts. So every hit you take is for keeps. However, as you explore the world, you'll occasionally come across little like seedlings. And if you can take one of those seedlings to preset planters, you can plant the seed. It grows into a flower. And if you pick up the flower, you get a full heal. However, once you pick it up, it is gone for good until you die and respawn. So you can't just like run in circles and keep healing yourself. You have to do that. Now, some might think, and this is what I thought initially, just maybe conserve your seeds and not plant them in all the different pots. However, I feel like I definitely came across a door in this game that is locked and it doesn't open until you use a bunch of different planters. So maybe not hoard seeds and just accept the fact that death is ever present. I don't know. But it's just a lot of fun to play. Like, I genuinely went into this game, and as I started finding a different, I was like, oh boy, here's that thing. I've seen that before. Like, and when you play a lot of video games, whether just for buying a ton, like we were talking about earlier with Chris, or if you review a lot of games, you feel yourself sometimes feeling like, this has been done before. The Simpsons lore is Harrison. Everything's been done, right? But that doesn't mean that being done has to somehow make it less enjoyable or less fun, because as long as the thing that's been done has been done again but exceptionally well, it's still enjoyable. It is still a lot of fun, and this product still brings its own narrative style and, like, you know, plot twists or whatnot to the pike. Even if you might find yourself going, I've Zelda'd this before. So as a result of that, I can genuinely see now where Cole was coming from on this game. And I also think this is an exceptional product and is well worth a folks money. And as far as performance goes, I actually shockingly did not experience performance issues with this game on the Switch. I mean, it's not a game that should have had any, but I feel like lately people just want to know. So I haven't experienced any issues on the Switch. It's a good game. pick it up. Rock, rock. These are crows. So there's my crow voice. Best impression I got. But,
oh, man. $20, your verdict.
Buy it, man. Pick it up.
Cool. All right. And now it's on all platforms. It's on Switch, PS4, PS5, and Xbox. So it's on everything. Pick it up. Well, Root Beer says it's game of the year. So
damn, Root Beer.
That Root Beer endorsement.
It's nominated for Best Indie on the Game Awards, according to the Nintendo eShop page.
Do you know what the other candidates are?
No clue.
Damn it. Root Beer's got the boat. He can let us know. I'm curious.
Anyway, next game to talk about tonight is Toy Tinker Simulator, developed by Turquoise Revival Games, published by Grab the Games, released November 19th on Steam for $12.99. Have you ever wanted to be a toy tinker? This is a unique chance to become one. Repair toys and start your toy museums to make everyone happy. Chris, tell us about Toy Tinker Simulator.
Wait a minute. I'm reviewing Toy Tinker Simulator and not Toy Tinker the Simulation?
Yes, it's a very distinct difference. We got simulator on this one, not the simulation.
I'll be right back in about 5 minutes. Okay, so all right, yeah, Toy Tinker Simulator, the simulation. So this is, I want to just call it like a relaxation sim. Like it has the effect on you of like playing like or like doing a hobby that you really enjoy, like something like crafty and stuff. But, you know, and this one is basically where like the goal of the game is to restore old toys. They're in bad shape and you got to fix them up, and then you sell them for money and then use that money to fund your next project. So like that's the gist of it. So here's how it goes is that, you know, it's first person and you kind of click around these rooms. It's a little bit like a first person point and click in that sense. You actually can like drag with the mouse the room around. And yes, you can invert Y and X axis. So no worries about that.
Thank God.
Yeah, I know. Like I had to invert the X axis because I was like dragging the room around and it was going opposite what I wanted it to. And I was like, no. So anyways, first person view. First thing you do is you go over to your computer and you can see all the projects that are waiting for you. And it's just going to look like a plastic mess. It's just like a dirt thing or whatever. Like it's usually barely recognizable, but you select the thing that you want to restore and it will tell you, oh, hey, you need the following tools, tools, materials, cleaners, paints, any kind of stuff like that, all the way up to big tools, because you start in a basically empty warehouse, not warehouse, but like a workshop, and you start with some money. And so like, basically like you get to do some online shopping. You can stick a pin in all the stuff that it says you need. And then you actually click on marketplace, go to the marketplace, shop for the things that you need and purchase them. And once you have them all purchased, of course, it's Amazon, so it arrives instantaneously. it's not called Amazon, but it works a lot like Amazon. Then you actually go back and take on your project. You click, okay, start project. And so now it appears on your table. All your stuff is before you. The type of work that you do is like basically you like click around the toy and like drag the camera around it and stuff. Like let's say it's a little toy truck. So you got to pull the wheels off first. You got to dismantle the thing so you can like clean it up. So you actually click on each of the wheels and like kind of make a motion to pop them off. And it does that. Sometimes you have to use a screwdriver to unscrew something, which of course you have to purchase a screwdriver first. All the items that you purchase have basically an endurance rating, which to me is ludicrous that like you can buy a screwdriver that only unscrews one screw on one toy. Like, I'm like, what is this guy doing to his tools? Gosh darn. But hey,
you're
fortunately stripping it seems
the screws,
like,
you're ruining the screwdriver. If it's made of Play-Doh, yeah, I mean, if you're buying those Play-Doh screwdrivers, you get what you pay for.
Screwdriver,
it.
Yeah, exactly. yeah, it's a instant screwdriver paradise. Anyways, so once you do all that, you get all the stuff, and then you then like clean up the parts, and that may involve like actually running them in the sink and like running a, you know, scrub brush with like a bottle of detergent over them. Or you could use your ultraviolet cleaner, which you purchase like one time and then it's basically in your shop. Like anytime you purchase like a big tool, that now is in your shop forever. So it's like, and that's kind of cool because if you do similar projects that use similar tools, you can save money because you don't have to buy all this new stuff. But at the same time, you know, you keep buying stuff and collecting it. And like the way it goes is like none of it is hard. You put something in the sink, you don't even see the detergent. It just, your cursor becomes a sponge and you just shake it back and forth over the object until the little status bar says 100%. And now it's clean. And you don't have to find the stuff and pick it up. You don't drop it. You don't break it. You just click on it. It goes back to your table. You know, when you're done with all the pieces, you know, there's like a paint area. You can do spray paints. You can do brushes. Again, it's just waving it over the thing until it's done. Then you put it back on the table, put it together by just clicking. Like, you can kind of intuitively know, you know, oh, well, here's the thing. So I need to click on these wheels to put them back on. And you know, they make that satisfying little snap sound, like when you do that. But even if so, it's like there's going to be like a white, yellow, or red highlight around something. And so, like, white means, or you know, like yellow means good to go, white means all done, and like red means you need to do something else first. Like, it's really easy to like get this stuff going. But anyway, when your tinkering is done, your toy is sitting there next to you. It looks bright and shiny and new and nice, and you actually, it pulls out your phone and you have to actually click on the take a picture button in order to snap a picture of it, and it does a little before and after, and then you put that online and you collect your payment for that project and go on to the next project. There's a level up system wherein the higher your level, the more complicated stuff you can unlock. And it pretty much every time you finish a project, there's like two more projects available. So it's like, even though I'm now an intermediate, like I can still access so many beginner projects just to grab up more money, you know? No. And it's really cool. Like, I like that it gives you all this freedom to like buy different kinds of screwdrivers. It's like, you need, this needs to be Phillips head, and they show you the little plus sign that means this is a Phillips. And, you know, it's like easy to match up, but you can like decide which screwdriver you want to get, you know, the slightly more expensive one will last a little longer made of slightly harder Play-Doh. And that's the thing, is that like your character doesn't really do anything. It's just you can walk into an office and there's actually like toys and stuff that you can just tinker around with in there, like a little marble thing that like, you know, does that thing where you spin the wheel and it drops a marble down, but then the marble enters the wheel again and it just, it's like perpetual.
Nice.
Like, you can turn just on the little to
fuck around with and tinker with.
Yeah, yeah. You can do all that just, you know, outside of the game, and then you go back to the game and do your projects. And like, holy geez, you'll just sit there and do project after project after project. That's and cool. Just like watch the money go up. And like I said, it keeps you busy, but it's like nothing bad happens. There's no time limit. If you don't finish a project, then I guess you can actually still put it online and get paid. They just won't pay you as much. It said that, but I don't think that's true. I think you actually have to finish the project, and why not? I mean, it's there for you. But it's just really cool, like, also to progress and like fill up your workshop with like all these tools that you need, like the big tools that don't break. And you know, like you might get a wood sander and like things like that, all that good stuff.
Cool.
So that's all it is. It's got a soundtrack that you can turn off, which I did. And
see, I heard that the music is calming in the game, so
it is. It's just not my jam.
Yeah,
and
you needed more Slipknot for that relaxation.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, I just like, I liked the sound of like, you know, scraping wood and like snapping plastic pieces back together and stuff like that. And like, awesome. Yeah. There's actually a channel that that's on YouTube of a guy who, I guess it's kind of like an ASMR channel, but not really. It's just, it's really high quality footage of this guy that takes apart video game systems and stuff like that and restores them using all these kind of tools, like, you know, a ultraviolet cleaner and like, you know, all these different things. And there's just no sound, but you hear all the sounds of the work. And you don't see the guy either. You just see his hands. And it's just like really cool. And like, you get to be that guy in this game, and that's actually really nice.
You know what else is nice? The fact that my cat just threw up right behind me. That was awesome.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Good shit. So $13 on Toy Tinker Simulator. What do you say?
Yeah, I say if this sounds like the kind of thing that you can relax to, go ahead and pick it up because it's quite fun. The projects seem to never end. There's level progression. There's, you know, workshop progression. But ultimately, it's like the challenge is just how much do you want to do it?
Yeah.
You know, like just keep doing it. I mean, there's 4 levels of difficulty, 2 of which I haven't yet accessed. And there's also like this other, it says like museum toys. And so I guess that's like really working with something. So maybe the challenge ramps up a lot eventually. But man, I just got really sucked into just doing work. And it was nice.
Cool.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Well, next game to talk about is Date Night Bowling, developed by Way Down Deep, published by Serenity Forge, released November 26th on Switch and Steam for $9.99. 10 characters in search of love gather around 2 neon-lit bowling alleys for some date night bowling. Choose your character, find your date, and try your best to hit it off, or at least hit some pins. Brooke, tell us about your time with Date Night Bowling.
I had a great time with this game. And you know, earlier we heard from Tim that bowling games can be a controls nightmare. That's extremely true. This game looks simple and pixely in a charming way. But let me tell you, somehow it really feels like bowling. All the things that happen to me in real life, every time I very rarely go bowling, too, happen in the game. Just like in real life, for reasons I could not understand, no matter what I did, my ball always veered to the right. Just like in real life, I got 1 strike, followed immediately by a gutter ball, and it never happened again. My first game, I picked Date Night Mode. It was solo. I just did 1 player, and it was just the bowling. I wasn't sure what I was expecting, some NPC to come hit on me while I was bowling alone. That didn't happen. I was sad, but I finished my first game. Hey, y'all know I like to be hit on by my NPCs. That's like my whole thing. So I finished my first game. Well, I got the hang of the controls a little better. And when I bowled my X amount of runs for the game or whatever in bowling terminology it is, it was over and I was back in the main game menu. So then I selected Date Night Bowling 2 players, me and 1 AI player. This is probably what I should have done the first time. At first, you can only pick from 2 players in the solo game, and your first one-on-one game is with the AI. You will pick 1 of the characters, Holland if you want to play a girl, Jasper if you want to play a dude, and the AI will just be the other one. So in this mode, you both show up to the bowling alley and you say, hey, I haven't done this in a while, I'm a little rusty, crack a couple jokes. Then you bowl a couple rounds. But this is a date. It's not just about whether you're good at bowling. No, you got to do all kinds of extra little shit, like get your date a drink. This is when the mini games start to come in, and they're all actually really cool and well done. I'm not normally a mini game fan, but this was they did it really well in this game. So you got to get your date a drink. Unfortunately, the soda machine, for some reason, is also a conveyor belt. So you have to push the right dispenser button for the right flavor they want just as it passes under the flavor. You're going to bowl a couple more rounds, then you're going to realize there's something stuck in your teeth. So you got to pick your teeth clean. That's another mini game, but only when your date isn't looking. If they look while you're picking mode. Their teeth, they will scream. So that's fun. And this is a romantic date, but it's also a friendly competition. You're going to want to give your date a high five at some point. And you know what? Let's make this special. You're going to give them 3 high fives. You're going to have to figure out whether they want a high five or a low five. And they're going to fake you out a couple times for each one. So you better be quick. If you don't fall for their fake outs, you give them the type of five they want that's high or low. And you slap their hand just at the right time. Your connection meter is going to go up. It's going to be a better date for you. Interestingly enough, for all the little mini games, your affection meter doesn't seem to go down if you like totally bomb it. They're not going to hate you or be all ugh if you do fail a mini game, if you bomb the one where you sing along with your song that just came on the radio. They're just not going to like you more if you do fail. They're not an asshole. Well, not Jasper anyway. That's the first guy I dated. However, the first guy I dated, while he didn't hate me, he just didn't like me. And that was very real for me, too, as one of my first bowling experiences. So, you know, it hit home. I did have a good time. What I think is most cool about this game is actually that it's a great local multiplayer game. I just don't feel like there are a lot of great games out there that fit that slot for 2-player, where you can actually have somebody over if they're not a big gamer. Let's say your date isn't super into games. They don't need to bring a controller over. You can just pass them the mouse and the keyboard of the controller you're using. And even if they're not, you know, super into games in general, with all the mini games, everybody's going to shine a little somewhere. It's going to be a fun social experience. It's The graphics are kind of like Cryptid the Necrodancer and some of the mechanics for the minigames. Super R2. For the minigames, you got a lot of Guitar Hero type stuff, some DDR type stuff, little rhythm coordination games. It's pretty neat. And it really feels built for mouse and keyboard. This is going to seem like a stretch maybe, but if you liked Papers, Please, which is a game that I love. I just love that PC game. I think you need this game. And it's not anything like Papers, Please, except that it just does a ton with the graphics that it has, the controls it has, and it just really gives a great experience.
It's interesting you're saying it's well built for mouse and keyboard. I'm wondering how it plays on the Switch, because it's going to be on the Switch as well.
I'd like to know that, too. I wouldn't mind reviewing it again and comparing it, if that does happen. But yeah, I think it works super well for that. But I'm always scared, like the others on our show, of like when something gets ported to Switch, is it going to work right? Sadly. Yeah.
Well, the game's $10. What do you think?
Can I rate it like a buy it and a fuck it? Why not? Because I think it's kind of coming in hot as both for me. There's a free demo. So I rate that demo both. Like, get this demo. You're going to see if you want it. It's a really neat little game for $10. My boyfriend probably like went crazy hearing me say neat, neato, as I played through the game. Something new, I'd be like, oh, neat. He'd be like, what is happening now? But then I made him come over and play local multiplayer with me. And we were like yelling at each other, getting competitive. And
did you beat him?
It was a cool time. I did, but you know, I'd already played around with Jasper. So I had a couple under my belt.
Experience.
Who cares? You won. A win is a win.
Bowling.
A win's a win, right?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. I'll take it. All right, next game to talk about is Amazing Princess Sarah, developed and published by Haruneko Entertainment, released November 12th on the Switch for $8. Travel through ice castles, cold dungeons, lava caves, and much more. Bring your father and king back home. Chris, tell us about your time with Amazing Princess Sarah.
Okay, Amazing Princess Sarah is a side-scrolling kind of beat-em-up. It's like a beat-em-up platformer. It's interesting. So it starts off and you think that, you know, oh, the princess is going to get kidnapped because that's what everybody's like, you know, coming for. But in fact, it is the king that gets kidnapped and the princess has to go save him. Whoa. Now with less boobs on the store page. Well, let me tell you about this game. It is, it's pixelated, 2D, and yet just like, the jiggle physics are off the chart in this game. I was going to save that for a little later, but somebody's already mentioned in chat. Yeah, every characters made entirely of fire have just jiggle physics. So it's
the main thing I'm pointing out is the store page. Her chest is covered up compared to other store pages.
Well, that's not the case on the title screen. So
yeah,
don't worry.
I kind of figured the title screen is a lot different, but the store page, they cover up the cleavage.
Yeah, once you purchase it, you're in for the PG-13 experience of your life. anyways, okay, so what happens is that you play as Princess Sarah, and you have to go through different castles. Each of them appear to be castles. I mean, I'm on the third one now, but they're very big and very long. They're broken up into like kind of smaller stages, but broken up by save statues of the same princess. Of the titular princess.
That was really good.
What a great word.
See what you did there. See what you did there.
Anyway, enough about this princess's titles. So there's different enemies, and they are kind of like, they very slowly ramp up throughout the stages, but a lot of them stay like with the same kind of templates of like a zombie, skeleton, big gruff thing, flying thing. And you defeat them, and when you defeat them, their corpses lay on the ground for you to then pick up and throw at other enemies. A little bit like River City Ransom, but not quite as sophisticated. And here's the thing about Princess Sarah. She is a gosh darn beast. She can pick up the largest enemies. She can throw chairs, tables, entire wardrobes. And, like, other things that are larger than she is. And, like, it's kind of funny because apart from, like, the shapeliness, like, she actually does kind of look, like, buff. Like, actually warrior-shaped. And so this is not the princess to mess with, clearly. And that also comes into play because once you finally get through all of these stages and, you know, defeat all these enemies and throw them into other enemies. And, by the way, each of the enemies has a different... thing that happens when you throw them. So like if you throw an archer type enemy, they'll be these arrows. They like spread out and like can, you know, hit other enemies. Like a bomber will of course explode when you throw them, and like the big guys just do like a ton of damage. And then sometimes they'll put like smaller, weaker skeleton enemies into a group of larger enemies just so you can kill that skeleton first, throw it at like another enemy, and then just kind of start this chain reaction that's just pretty great. Kind of wish it was a little more like chain reaction-y. That is to say, like something like Children of Mana or something, where like you just throw one enemy and suddenly there's like 12 enemies bouncing off every wall and just exploding. Like that, Children of Mana is like the best mana game, and nobody believes me. Anyways, what was I saying? Oh yes, so all this comes to a head. Like once you get through the castle and of course destroy all the enemies, you know, destroy all the torches on the walls, which of course contain hearts to restore your life. And if you get killed, you get sent back to the save point. But but there's a level up system where that makes you stronger and gives you more life. And that, even if you die and get sent back to the save spot, your experience is persistent. So you can always eventually power your way through something, because you'll just eventually gain so many levels that you'll be just much more powerful. Which is great, because yeah, some of these enemies are real jerks. But yeah, once you get to the end of this castle, then you get a boss, and the bosses are very impressive. Easily the size of the entire screen versus your like, you know, little 4x4, you know, character sprite. And they often can't be defeated by just running up and hitting them with like, you know, the little silverware sword that she has. So often, like, the stage will be constructed in such a way that you can throw things at this boss while dodging its attacks and stuff like that. And the bosses are really like an event in this game. They're not just a larger version of the same enemies. So it's definitely worth it to get through the castle just to fight the boss. And the other interesting thing about this game, so it only has one save data, which, you know, the cool thing about this one, though, is that if you start the game over, you can choose to start the game over in your current level. So then you can bust through the like earliest stages at like level 24 or whatever, and like just make mincemeat out of everybody and get back to where you were and have all that much more experience. So it's like, it's kind of a cool thing if you get stuck, if you're just like, well, I'm just going to play through the whole game up to this point. And of course, it's platformer as much as it is beat 'em up. So they don't just throw strong enemies at you. There are also like, you know, complicated jump puzzles and things like that, disappearing platforms, the like. But ultimately, yeah, this is a pretty solid little platformer and a pretty decent beat 'em up. It's got all the right, just good enough pieces to come together to be a game that's a lot better than it looks. That is to say, it looks like it, you know, would be a little bit more generic, maybe jokey. But it's not really. It's actually pretty good.
Cool. So $8. What's your verdict?
Easily worth it for $8. This is one of those games that I would see them trying to pass off for like $15 or something like that. And I would be like, hold on a minute. But no, $8. If it's not a buy it, it's a fuck it. Why not? So there you go.
Cool. Sounds good. It is also available on Xbox for $6.49 if you're looking for a weird priced game. But
Next, we all like those prices.
Yeah. Next game to talk about is Kung Fury Street Rage, A Day at the Beach, developed and published by Hello There Games, released November 12th on Steam as DLC for Kung Fury for $5.99. Kung Fury is available for $6.99 on Steam. Beat Nazis all day long, everywhere. Become the action. Uphold the law. Purnell, tell us about your time with Kung Fury Street Rage, A Day at the Beach.
Quickest video from Purnell ever. You can time it. So, Kung Fury is a game that is meant to be a beat-em-up by the classic movie, I call it a classic, Kung Fury, involving characters that existed within that franchise. So, in the Day of the Beach expansion, you get a number of side-scrolling stages that you're allowed to play through, in which case the titular characters of this product are attempting to get to the beach. That's the game. They go from left to right, enemies come onto the screen, most of them Nazis, that's a plus. You beat the crap out of them using a one-button combat system. Eventually, after you beat up enough guys, you'll charge up a special meter, and when it's full, you can use your special attack. And each character has their own. It's a powerful move. It kills people. So, There are objects in the levels that you can break. When you break them, either nothing will be there or a heart will be there. Hearts can be used to replenish health. You get 5 hits before you die. No, the levels don't have bosses. It's just get through a level. It's over. Move to the next level, because usually 1-1 and 1-2 and 2-1 and 2-2, et cetera, up through stage 7, which is the titular beach. You pretty much do this throughout the entire game. Combat is interesting in that there's not a lot of strategy going on here. I will say at most you get some crowd control elements regarding the usage of your special weapon. And there are also some interesting elements where if there are certain enemies that will teleport behind you when you strike them. So you kind of force you into a sort of like punch left, now punch right, now punch left, then punch right sort of vibe to knock them out. If it sounds like I'm describing this as a way that's like, this is just the game, well, you're right. Because I think the idea that people are probably going to get out of this is just the whole idea that you're controlling characters from the franchise, including the addition of David Hasselhoff as a playable character.
Yeah, buddy. David Hasselhoff beating the shit out of the Nazis. What else could you need in a game?
I do love that. It's David freaking Hasselhoff. But you also have other cool characters by the name of such like Triceracop. Yeah. That I like the most, like his name is Triceracop. Just take it all home, folks. That's all we need right there. But there's also like, you know, like a Viking princess, and there's the main character, and there's a guy who's like a robot with a face named Hacker Man. He's a hacker man. But I came away from this game with I guess it's generally a fuck it, why not, in a sense, because, you know, its entire premise is just be kind of like more of the tie-in product that you already like from the Kung Fury franchise that they did with the earlier game, which is an expansion to. But it makes me just wish there was more, because I like the idea of beating the shit out of Nazis. And I like the fact that I'm controlling Triceracop. I just want more. Like, if this was like more akin to like some like a Streets of Rage type deal with like just like weapons that you can pick up, or like maybe some special moves beyond just the one, I don't know, just a little bit more. Bosses. Freaking bosses. Just add that little extra bit of character. Hacker Man's evil twin brother, you know, corporate man. I don't know, something. But instead, it feels so short, succinct, and quick. It could have been more. So, like, I'm not going to go so far to say deny it, because I definitely feel like I got something out of it. I just felt myself, like, by the end of, like, the third or fourth stage, I was just going, I wish there was more here, because I feel like everything I'm doing is just the same thing with a new backdrop, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just the nature of the beast. So,
no, as it stands, the game is $7. If you already have it, cool. If not, the game is $7. The DLC is $5.99. They also have a bundle of both of them together for like $11.97 or something weird like that. $11.94 on Steam. What are your thoughts?
I probably wouldn't go so far as the $11.97 deal, because the whole premise of a fuck it, why not, is that it's cheap enough that you'll just putz around with it for like the hour or so for what you're charged for it. So if it's at $11.97, even with a bunch of extra content, even though, because the content is fairly similar to itself, I'd have to give that a deny. Low grade pricing, like if we're talking like $5 or something, it is a fuck it, why not. However, if you're already a huge fan of Kung Fury, then just a no-brainer for you, because it's Kung Fury humor. Yeah. I'm reviewing this in the sense of a person who's never heard of Kung Fury in that sense. So, well, fuck it, why not, if you can get it for $5. Otherwise, I have to go with a deny. It just needs more.
So if you already own the game, the DLC for $6 is a fuck it, why not?
Yes.
And if you're new to the whole thing, do you think it's worth picking up just Kung Fury for $7?
Maybe so, yeah, because then you can get an experience of that, and if
you like it enough, you could grab the DLC.
Yes, but not together. Just do one first. No. To test waters, and then go from there.
That buck you save ain't worth the risk in case you don't like it.
Well, yeah, I mean, think there about it. Go. I mean, like, if you can get the experience out of the initial bucket, then why dump more? You had your fun. You had the fuck it, why not part.
Because good. David Hasselhoff, that's why you go for the extra $6.
Oh my God.
David Hasselhoff beating the shit out of Nazis on a beach.
You can save yourself some money and buy snowshoe crab. horseshoe crab. Rescue.
You could use that dollar you save to buy Horseshoe Crab Rescue. There you go.
There you go. Snowshoe Crab, A Day on the Slopes.
That'll be the sequel, Snowshoe Crab nice. Rescue. Instant, quick, tell the dev.
Snowshoe Crab.
Chris, tell the dev.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you got his number too.
1-894 Jenny. That's his number.
What? I got it. I got it, Purnell.
Yeah. See, throwbacks to last week, Joe. Come on, man.
Oh, geez. All right. One final game to talk about tonight is called Number One Sudokus, developed and published by Eclipse Games. It released November 25th on the Switch for $3.99. In Number One Sudokus, you'll find a story mode with over 240 Sudokus to solve on increasing difficulty levels. On top of that, you can play the daily Sudoku, which is going to be the same for everyone in the world and will change every day. Finally, you could also play random Sudoku of various difficulties. If you like Sudoku, Number One Sudokus is the game for you and the last one you'll need to satiate your Sudoku appetites. Who wants to start on this? Everyone has it.
I think you just gave us the review with that very little I think my final line for the whole freaking review is what
I wrapped it up pretty good.
Someone has to talk. Chris, how about you talk about it a little?
I
can talk about it.
Okay, Purnell, how about you talk about it then? What the fuck?
All right.
I just asked who wants to talk about it.
So just like Number One Crosswords, which was developed by the same developer, for the life of me, I have no fucking clue why they like to utilize something referred to as a story mode when there's no story at all. It's literally just
pretty playing. They did that in Number One Anagrams too.
Why do you guys, if you guys are listening to this, why do you call it story mode? Just call it, you know, mode, game, play
single
games.
Player.
Single player. Yeah, you know, there's no story.
Wait, two-player Sudoku? How does that even work?
But
story mode in a world of Sudoku gone wild.
One number stands against all.
Number four stars in Number One Sudokus.
But once you find yourself finally able to get over the nonsense of why is there a story mode that is no story in Sudoku, what you are left with is a fantastic rendition of a portable Sudoku digital game. There are a wealth of puzzles in here broken between easy, medium, and hard. And as the game plays, there is a fantastically relaxing OST that plays over the game. I actually was genuinely joking. I said, it's not even joking. I was actually contemplating loosely while playing. I was like, wouldn't it be interesting if this was on an episode of Rhythm and Pixels track from Number One Sudoku? So, hey, it might happen. But the interesting thing about this game is that on the positive, if you're a person like me who hates being timed in games like this because I never quite really picked up on it, you'll be happy to know that you can't see that they're timing you until you've done the level.
Yeah. And of course, it's a nice surprise.
It was a shitty surprise. But I was like, at first I saw they weren't talking. I was like, oh my God, they finally got rid of the stupid clock. Just let me play the thing in a relaxing manner. And then you beat the level. I was like, it took you 7 minutes. Like, fuck you. I was trying to relax. But I guess there are some people out there that just really like the idea of timing themselves. I don't know. I just always felt like somebody who really cares about clocks and isn't playing spare will just cheat and just beat the level and then come right back and fill it in and get like a 30-second time for beating the stage. But as a pure Sudoku experience, there's a lot of levels here. The interface is actually pretty cool too. I didn't bother with touchscreen, so I don't know how effective that was, but you can click over to the different areas on the board, and when you go to a spot you want to place a number, you hit L and R to use like a rotary dial sort of system that goes between 0 and 9. And when you find the number you want, you press A. If it's the right number, you go ding, ding, ding. And if you get the wrong number, go bing. So try again. There's no penalty. Just lost time. That's what I mean by a relaxing game.
If I can interrupt a little, what I like about this is that not only can you push A to see if you've got the right number, if you want to play it where it doesn't tell you the right answer so that you're entirely relying on your own logic, you can push Y. And by the way, all of this is touchscreen too, so you don't even have to push buttons. Like, you can actually fully utilize the touchscreen on this one. But you can push Y to just make a note to put that number there so that you can check yourself as you're going along without committing to a certain answer that the game will tell you is right or wrong. And then when you're ready to actually put the real number in there, then you go back and push A to get that going. So it's kind of cool if you're into Sudoku that you can make notes so you can keep track of what you're trying to accomplish here instead of just, you know, doing what a hardcore player might consider guessing, you know?
Which, actually, you made an interesting comment as far as, like, that made me think about a potential improvement they could do for, like, a future game or even a patch, for all I know, which is they add a clock, which lets you time your stages. I think it'd be even more beneficial if they had a mistake counter, like, because if I'm utilizing their system that they provide to the fullest, immediately turning it off and on, but mind you, but if I make a mistake and I didn't intend to, I think that would be cool to say, hey, I solved this puzzle. How many times did I actually screw up? Oh, there we go, right there. Versus, you know, it might have taken me 10 minutes to beat the level, but I made zero mistakes, meaning that I solved it, you know, through logic and no guessing, and all my assumptions were correct.
Proud.
I'm a little baby. I'm a little baby when it comes to Sudoku, so I do not want to hear that I've made mistakes.
I think that's where, like, the whole be able to toggle it on and off comes in, because for that matter,
yeah,
might be able to toggle off the timer too. Like, I don't care how long it took me to beat these levels or more. Let me correct myself. I do care if you show me, but if you don't show me, I'm happy. I don't want to know. But once I know, I'm angry.
Nice.
Brooke, it's did like you have any time with this game at all?
Brooke's like, nope, I'm out, bitches. The hell you think?
Brooke went quiet on us.
Oh, well.
But as far as this game goes, though, like, I don't even want to give it a fuck or not. I think it's a genuine buy product. Like, if you like,
I wonder if something happened to Brooke's audio. I saw her mute and unmute, so I wonder if something's just fucked up over there.
She's still in the chat?
Brooke left. I think something's fucked up on her. Oh, she joined.
Come back!
I see.
Come back! It reminds me of the Simpsons Zinc ad. Like, come back, Zinc!
Guys, can you hear me?
Yes, now we can.
Hi.
Oh my god, I don't know what happened. I had to close out Skype twice. I've been talking about Sudokus this whole time. I thought you guys were ignoring me. I was wow, they're cutting me off. I checked to see if I was muted. That was awesome. But yeah, Sudoku soundtrack was lit for me. I had the opposite experience as Purnell. I didn't find it relaxing. I thought it was like really dramatic. Like, I felt like I was in an anime, and I felt like I was like looking out to a city with a full moon above me, like crying because my father tried to murder me, or like something really deep. Like, all this.
I say that because now you say, like, I'm thinking of anime. I'm thinking of like a Yu-Gi-Oh style Sudoku tournament. It's like my ultimate move.
Dude, that's what it made me feel like. I'm like, they're trying to give me importance to my game. I kind of want to boot it back up because I spent a couple hours in this game, and see if maybe it gives me different music, like more relaxing. I actually hit Chris up like 4 or 5 days ago on Discord, and I was like, yo, bro, the Sudoku music is so lit. And he was like, lol, what? So I was like, yeah, jam into some Sudokus right now. He was like, oh, okay, word.
It's, well, and as I was telling Brooke, is that like that sometimes happens, like the Rainy Frog games, like Pixel Lines, like they're like background music sounds like straight up Coldplay.
Damn, I think I was
just like piano and epic chords and minors and majors and stuff. I'm just like, what? This is way too intense for just drawing a bunch of colored lines.
But it does add to the effect. Like, I love the Pixel Line. Like, that's quality product that I wish more people played. Like, think of it like that's a game where it's one of those games where it's like hundreds of puzzles. I reviewed it years ago, and I still go back to play it to solve puzzles. Like, it's just good, and the music helps.
Yeah, I think that's one of the Rainy Frog ones.
Rainy Frog didn't do all of them? I thought they did all the Pixel games.
Yeah, they did.
Oh, yeah,
I didn't hear you say Pixel. I just heard the hundreds of puzzles or whatever. Sorry.
That's okay. If anything, it leads to an interesting segue with this, which is that if you're a fan of Sudoku, I feel like you'd have a similar, you know, take on this product too. Not just because the daily puzzles that Joe mentioned in the preview, but just because they give you a fair number of just normal puzzles in the game as well. It's going to take you a while. If you do like a puzzle a day, it's going to take you a bit to get through this thing. If you do two puzzles a day, well, I guess when this is done, you can find one of the other Sudoku games on the internet. I'm sure there's others. But as far as this goes, I feel like this is one of the top dog ones on the block. This is the one you want to play first. It's a good game. It's quality music. It's not Rainy Frog, but it could be Rainy Frog. I liked it. And I don't even generally play Sudoku, and I thought it was great.
Cool. Yeah, so it's $4. What does everyone think?
if you like Sudokus, that's a great price. I do think there's a lot of content, like Purnell said. I really like the backgrounds. I don't know if you guys got to the Windows 95 type background, but I was digging that.
I scrolled through all of them. Yeah, they were pretty great.
Windows, I missed
Which
Windows.
One did I use?
I stayed on that Windows 95 screensaver. That was taking me back.
I stayed on purlin shapes.
Ooh, like, all right.
Yeah, it undulates a little bit. Anyway.
Cool. Well, that is it for this episode. Made it through. It? Yeah.
There's no other use. What about, no, that's what it. About board game?
Now, you only took 3 minutes and 26 seconds on that one review you said we could time. Like, this is your
fault. I told you I was shooting for low time. Tim didn't
got it.
Tim would have judged me favorably. I hope. Nah, he was judged. He would have been like, yeah, could have been shorter per now. I kid.
Just wait.
Kid.
When the episode goes up and all the review times are there, the longest one is going to be Tim's because we talked so much after his review. So it's going to look like he did a 25-minute review of Instant Sports Paradise.
It was very important for people to know that there is both a forklift simulator and a forklift the simulation.
That is
and
important by the way, to know.
I will compare the two and review them both gratis because I bought them both. So no need to even hit up the developer. We'll surprise them with it.
Sounds good. Well, we'll put that on the docket for next week. Music. Does anyone have any suggestions for music to play to end the show?
Do we have any music from number one Sudoku?
I don't know. I'll try to get it. If we could get it, I'll play it. Otherwise, I'll play something else. But does anyone have any final words to end the show?
I'm just really glad that I got Sherlock and Chris got Amazing Princess Sarah this week. That made me so happy.
Wanna die young, just as late as I can. Wanna get messed up and go to Japan. But not the spice. Oh, you got my eye, girl. Oh, you got my vice. 'Cause it's you.
Messed up, baby, you know I feel so far from incomplete. 'Cause it's you.